How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Josh Nason here on Figure Four Daily. It is May 4th, 2011 here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Brendan Schaub is here on the line. We're going to be talking a lot of UFC, mixed martial arts, and more. And Brendan, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, man.
You apparently, actually, I know you were there. Toronto, the biggest UFC in history, the fan expo and the show itself. And overall, how was the experience?
You know what, I've been to a lot of sporting events, you know, football, UFCs, and everything, and I've never seen anything like that. It was it was crazy. I can't even describe it, man. It was just overwhelming. It was so ridiculous and just like nothing I've ever seen, man.
Now, for people that have never been, I guess, first off, to a live UFC event, we'll start with that. You obviously have fought on many of them, but, I mean,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure you started out as a fan before Ultimate Fighter and everything like that. And, you know, what would you say to people who have not yet had the experience of a live UFC? What is it like being there?
It's just, man, there's a reason the UFC's, you know, as big as it is, and, you know, it's kind of taken things over in the sports world, and that's because, you know, they do such a great job of entertaining the fans and putting a show on, you know. It's definitely, you know, people pay for the tickets to be entertained, and the UFC's the best in the business at doing that. So it's just a different atmosphere. You know, it's a great time, and it's a little more intense than watching it just on TV.
Now, what about the fan expos? Because they've done several now. There was another one this week in Toronto. One of the things that a lot of fans say that get a chance to go to the events is the fighters are very accessible. And what are your thoughts on the expos and getting a chance to meet with all the fans?
Yeah, you know, it gives us a chance to, you know, to kind of interact with the fans. And it's an easy way for them to meet their favorite fighter. And I think this last expo in Toronto was the biggest one they've done yet. They flew out so many fighters for the event, and man, it's a cool experience for the fighters too, because you know, there's a reason why, you know, you might be someone's favorite fighter, and you get to meet these fans, you get to talk to them, and it gets pretty personal. So it's a great experience.
Would you like to have fought on the show this past weekend, or was it kind of a deal where, you know, there's a lot of people there, and you know, some people can deal with the pressure of a crowd that big, and other people are not able to. I mean, would that have been kind of a dream to be able to do that show? I mean, presumably they're going to be doing stadium shows in the future. You'll end up on one of them. But would you say that would have been a dream, or rather intimidating?
Oh, man, the bigger the better for me. You know, I fought in MGM and, you know, all over. So to fight there in front of 55,000 fans would have been great. You know, I'm hoping the UFC puts me on the UFC Rio card, which is going to be a huge card this year. And you know, I'm sure that place can be packed. So bigger the better for me.
When you first got involved with Ultimate Fighter, did you ever think that UFC this soon would present a show in a building that big?
Yeah, I did. You know, you know, I'm definitely aware of what the UFC is capable of doing, and you know, Dana White being the front man, you know, he's just he's relentless in his pursuit to take this sport to the top, and you know, I'm never surprised what Dana White or the UFC does.
Were you disgusted by the hematoma on the head of Mark Hominick? Have you ever seen anything like that fighting or training?
Yeah, I've seen hematoma, was never really on the forehead like that. He kind of looked like a Klingon, man. It was pretty intense. I was just hoping it wouldn't get split open. Then you know, it could have been a real rough night, I think, for the fans, or some fans. Others might have liked it, but never seen anything like that. That was crazy.
One more before we get to your career, the GSP fight with Jake Shields in the main event. A lot of criticism from fans about GSP and the fight. A lot of people figured he should have been able to finish Jake Shields. And, you know, the biggest UFC of all time, he's out there in the main event, closing the show, and ends up being a five-round decision. What were your thoughts on the fight? And, you know, as a fighter, what is your mindset going into fights, to big fights like that? Is it, I'm going to do whatever I can to finish, or is just getting the victory the most important thing to you?
You know, with George, he did a great job. You know, that matchup is you know, it's not really tailor-made to be an exciting fight. You know, you got a guy who specializes in the ground game, and you got George can kind of do it all. And, you know, I thought George did a great job. I thought he won every round easily. You know, what most people I don't think know is, you know, George was poked in the eye, and he couldn't see out of his eye for a lot of the fight. So yeah. I think that kind of switched things up, and George was a little off, you know, with his right hand, but he was going for it. And, man, when guys are that good and it's two world-class guys, it's tough to finish guys. So, you know, George is the best in the world, and I don't think he should get criticized at all for that. If anything, I think Jake Shields should get criticized. George is the champion. You got to beat the champion. He went in there and tried to outstrike, you know, George St. Pierre, which was not a good game plan.
So, Brendan, are you still training out of Greg Jackson's in Arizona?
Well, Greg Jackson's in Albuquerque, but I go down there every now and then. Greg usually comes up to here, but I got a great relationship with Greg Jackson and the rest of the guys down there. I'm based out of Denver mostly with Nate Marquardt and Shane Carwin.
I see. Now, I mean, talk a little bit about training with those guys, two guys that are really kind of at interesting points in their careers. Obviously, Shane is fighting here really soon against a newcomer to the UFC and has been out for quite a while. And then also with Nate dropping down to 170 pounds. I mean, the experience of training with two guys that are different stages of their careers, but are obviously veterans and have had some big fights in their own right.
Yeah, you know, Shane and I started together, so me and him are like brothers. I'm a little brother to him, and he's kind of showed me the ropes. And Shane's first fight, I was in the back corner, and he said to me, you know, right after, man, it's not going to be long before you're here in my shoes, man. I thought, yeah, right. And then literally a year from that date, I was doing the same thing. So, you know, that's all I know is being around Carwin and Marquardt helping us out. That's where Shane and I started, at Nate's gym, and Nate's definitely took us under his wing. So, man, those guys mean the world to me.
So talk about where you're at with your career. I mean, it's obviously on a great upswing. You're 8-1 right now, coming off the big knockout of a guy that has been known to fight fans forever, Mirko Krokop, back in March, knockout of the night. I mean, for a guy that, you know, you had lost in the finals of the Ultimate Fighter, sometimes that can go one way or another depending on who loses. But since that spot, I mean, he's done 4-0 in the UFC and two back-to-back wins over two tough veterans.
Yeah, you know, I think you learn most about a fighter when he comes off the loss. Guys can go two ways. Either they get a lot better and they're meant to be in the UFC, or it proves that, you know, they shouldn't be there. And for me, I think I answered that call and a lot of critics' questions, you know, with the fights I've had lately. And, man, a fight with Krokop, you know, it's the biggest fight to date for me. And, man, it was a tough fight, and I got good ring experience and walked away the knockout of the night. And then before that was Gabriel Gonzaga, who's a world-class fighter. So I'm on a good streak right now, and I hope to continue the streak of legends with fighting Big Nog in Rio. So I'm just waiting for the word.
So going back to Krokop, I mean, before, earlier in this last year, you know, Pat Barry, it was a big deal about him fighting Krokop, and almost a lot of people kind of gave him, you know, a little bit of grief because he had a little bit, quote-unquote, too much respect for him, you know, a little bit of hugging during the fight, and there's always that worry that maybe that might happen again, or, you know, it's something a little bit unusual. Did you have any of that, I'd say hero worship, but I guess kind of balancing the respect level of fighting someone that has been so instrumental in the sport for so long, and then also realizing that at the end of the day, you got to get the job done, you have to win because it's your career at stake?
You know, I'm a huge Krokop fan. He's really the guy I followed and I was a fan of before I even started training. You know, he's definitely a hero of mine, but and so was Gonzaga. I look up to both those guys, and if they give me the Nogueira fight, he's also a big guy who, you know, kind of, you know, I aim to be like. So as far as the hero worship stuff, man, all that stuff goes out the window once we get in there. I think the best way to show respect is by getting after these guys and giving them my all and trying to knock these guys out. I think that's the way you show respect. To hug them and do all that other stuff just is doing a disservice to great fighters.
So is the rumors right now you and Big Nog in August in Rio?
That's the rumors, man. I don't have a contract or anything. I'm just waiting for, you know, see what's going on there. But, you know, it's it would be a dream come true to me to fight down Brazil. That was one of my goals before, you know, I got to the big show. And I see the opportunity there, and I know Nogueira wants to fight me. So just waiting to see what happens.
When you mentioned the fight with Krokop and going in there and obviously having a lot of respect for him and that sort of thing, does it kind of just immediately turn off as soon as the opening bell rings and all of a sudden you realize, okay, he's going to try and kick my head off here? Is that kind of when the switch turns on?
Yeah, even before that, I mean, at the weigh-ins, you know, my blood, my adrenaline's going, you know, great. You know, the guy's a legend. I know that. I respect him. But, man, once that gate shuts and, you know, it's a fight. It doesn't matter who it is. So, and all that stuff goes out the window. I can't see it going any other way for me, and I think that's why the UFC gave me the fight. They know my style, my demeanor. It's a little different than other guys.
When did it hit you that, my God, I just knocked out Mirko Krokop?
Probably not till the following week. You know, Mirko messed up my nose pretty bad, and I had to have surgery immediately once I got back, and I got sick. So I had a little rough patch there once I got done. So, man, probably after my surgery, I was driving, and it hit me. And, you know, it's pretty cool, but, you know, it's definitely something I'll always remember. And it'll be one of those checks next to my, you know, on my career. But, man, bigger and better now, and it was a great moment. But I'm back to training now and looking forward to the next challenge.
When did you first sort of taste fame? Was it right around the time of the Ultimate Fighter TV show? Was that like the first time that, you know, maybe you were walking down the street or you went to a UFC event and all of a sudden there's people that were asking for your autograph?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the Ultimate Fighter, especially our season, was definitely the biggest ratings ever for the Ultimate Fighter. So, definitely being on that show and walking around town, that was definitely the first time.
Now, given that, this was a couple of years ago, so it's been a few years now that you've been a well-known fighter. Is it ever going to not be weird to, for example, you're on the internet and you mentioned rumors of you fighting Nogueira? Is it ever not going to be weird to see these rumors on the internet long before you've even heard or confirmed anything?
Not really. You know, I was a super fan before, you know, I was competing in the UFC, and you know, I know how these things work. So everyone wants to play, you know, Mr. Joe Silva out there and come up with these, you know, dream matchups or matchups they think are going to happen, and the rumors start. It becomes a little more realistic to me when, you know, Big Nog does an interview and says he wants to fight me, and then I do an interview. When I physically see a guy, you know, call me out or me calling him out, that's when it becomes a little more real. But as far as the rumor stuff, you know, it's fun. You know, I agree with it, and, you know, the fans are what make the sport, and I think that's pretty cool.
How often do you read a rumor about either yourself or an upcoming fight that you're supposed to be involved in or wherever, and it turns out to be the case? And what percentage of rumors out there do you read them, and they end up just being completely preposterous?
Man, that's a good question. You know, having Twitter these days, I think it's easy to see a ton of that stuff. You know, I'm a real active on Twitter, and that's how I communicate with my fans and help out sponsors and, you know, just everyday life on there. So I think a lot of times you'll see, even before I know, like, you know, Brendan versus Nogueira official, and I'm like, really? And then, you know, you might get a call, or when I was supposed to fight Frank Mir, before I knew, people had stuff out, and I never got a contract, and Mir never got a contract. That was just kind of hearsay. So, man, I'd say 60-40. 60, they're usually never true, but sometimes they are.
Tell everybody a little bit about Defendo.
About what?
Defendo?
What's that?
Defendo? Nothing rings a bell. If you go to your Wikipedia here.
Speaking of rumors.
Oh, yeah, this is a good one. If you go to your Wikipedia here, under your name, it's got style, boxing, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, stance, orthodox, team, Jackson submission fighting. Rank, you're listed as a green belt in Defendo.
Defendo, I've never heard of that, but man, I'd like to learn. Sounds
my
cool.
God.
You know, the thing with Wikipedia, I think anyone can get on there and type information. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, Defendo, I've never even heard of it, so do not have a green belt in Defendo. I'm a white belt in Defendo.
That's no good, because I saw it there, and I thought, what the hell is Defendo? And I clicked on it, and there is, in fact, a page on the art of Defendo.
Does it show any other fighters on who train in it?
Let me see here. I don't think so. The creator is Bill Underwood. But it does not have a list of for example, famous practitioners of Defendo. So, well, that's too bad.
Someone made that up.
How did you first get into mixed martial arts?
You know, the first UFC was here in Denver in 93, and my uncle, you know, always had the videos, and I grew up a huge Bloodsport fan, so I was always in martial arts and competing, whether it was football or something like that, and I was just a huge fan of the UFC, so, you know, I shortly fell into boxing, and then once I got to the college level of football, to stay in shape, I'd do boxing, martial arts, and it was just a matter of time before, you know, I decided, you know, I realized I could do this and get pretty far, and that's how I got started.
Now, Bloodsport, I was a huge fan of that movie myself when I was a kid, and have you gone back in recent years and rewatched it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What do you think about that movie here in 2011?
You know, not as cool as when you're a kid, but it's still one of the greats, one of the classics.
It's still got a certain charm to it.
Oh, yeah. It was great back then, and, you know, even today, it's still an entertaining movie.
Now, when you first got into martial arts after watching a Bloodsport, you know, obviously it's different, right?
What was that? Sorry.
It's different when you start martial arts after watching Bloodsport.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, way different.
Now, were you, because obviously on this website we cover mixed martial arts and pro wrestling. And
sure.
We got a lot of pro wrestlers that, you know, they started amateur wrestling because they thought when they went in there there'd be a ring. And then they get in there and it's like, you know, it's not like anything they see on television. And at first they're kind of, you know, disappointed. And then some of them actually get into it and become great amateur wrestlers. Was it like
sure.
that at all for you after watching Bloodsport to go in there to do some, you know, some martial arts and it's not... you know, monkey kung fu or whatever it was that they had in that movie?
Yeah, I think it goes both ways. I think you realize, you know, some of that stuff just would never work in real life. And then some of it, you know, I think, you know, growing up watching the UFC, you know, studying a lot of film on your favorite fighters and watching Pride and K-1 and all that, I think it actually helps you out because you know what to expect. And, you know, you see these techniques and you can try them out from real fighters. So I think it goes both ways.
I admit, I think next time I see you fight, Brendan, I'm going to be disappointed if you don't use the nickname Defendo and have Bruce Buffer announce it. I think that'd be a tremendous nickname for you.
I know. It definitely helped the Defendo martial artist out, that's for sure.
Talk a little bit about the, you know, another martial arts star, and I want to see what your reaction is. Steven Seagal, the newest... Certainly, mixed martial arts, a trainer to the stars. Can you just, what's your take on this for being from a, you know, a different camp than these guys and seeing this kind of from the outside, obviously there in Toronto, seeing Steven and his shooter glasses and
yeah, I sat behind him and boy, they were excited about that kick. You know, I think it's kind of funny he takes all that credit for the kick. You know, I don't know what he does for those guys, so I can't criticize him too much. You know, but that's like Mike Tyson, you know, jumping around every time I throw a right hand. You know, yeah, you know, I see Mike Tyson throw his right hand. I watch a lot of film on him, but, you know, it's a front kick. You know, in martial arts, taekwondo, you know, you learn front kicks. So for him to take that credit, he must be doing something right because Anderson's won that way and so has Machida now. So his front kick's definitely working whenever he's showing him, but... to take credit for it, and those guys love him, so he's doing something right.
So you haven't considered bringing Jean-Claude Van Damme to Denver?
I wish, man. Him or Chuck Norris. We're trying to figure it out now.
That would be another great thing. Your nickname is Defendo and having JCVD in your corner.
Serious, man. It'd be a great spectacle.
So talk a little bit about the Ultimate Fighter experience, because this is something that comes up a lot for both good and bad reasons around and about, and obviously there's a lot of questions right now with the, you know, the Brock versus Dos Santos season and not doing so great in the ratings and, you know, the experience itself and so on. Talk about your experience with, I mean, you were on one of the most visible seasons around with Rashad versus Rampage, and just that experience as a whole, you know, things that you took away from it and what you kind of see now watching the show.
You know, the Ultimate Fighter was the biggest opportunity, you know, ever for me in my life, and I'm always grateful for it. It's the biggest platform you can have, you know. My mentality going to the show was, you know, just do well in the house, make a name for yourself, and, you know, you're going to get your foot in the door to the UFC. yeah, man, it was easy for me to stay focused, and it was a great time, and you're just training all the time. That's all you had to focus on. I think a lot of the guys in the house weren't used to that, and that's why they go a little batty. But for me, it was just everyday life, but in Vegas. And, you know, I couldn't talk to anyone on the phone. So, man, it was a great honor, and I had a great time doing it, and I was very successful on the show. And what guys don't realize is, the show is just the igniter, man. Yeah, I mean, you got a long ways to go to compete in the UFC. The Ultimate Fighter is you're just fighting basically other guys who want to get into the UFC. These aren't UFC fighters. So it's just a platform for you to try and impress Dana White and Joe Silva if you don't win the show to get a contract and try and live your life as a professional UFC fighter. So for me, I realized that, and I think that's why I worked so hard after the show, and that's why I'm being successful now.
So going into the show, you were 4-0, four first-round knockouts.
Yeah.
That was on the rise. Now, you hear a lot from fighters now that, you know, when the show first started, obviously, you know, MMA was nowhere as near as it is now, and it was an opportunity for people just to get noticed and get their names out there. But now these days, with all these different organizations, these small organizations getting on internet pay-per-view, even regular pay-per-view now, there's more of a chance to get exposed now than there was back then. You know, this is 2009 when the show was on. Did you have any, like, did you feel like you had to absolutely take this opportunity, or is there any hesitation like, well, you know, I might want to go the more traditional route and get noticed as opposed to doing the reality TV approach?
No, I mean, when the Ultimate Fighter calls, especially their only heavyweight season, really, besides the first season, you definitely, it's an opportunity you want to jump at. I would have done anything to get in the UFC. If they would have said, hey, man, we're going to send you to freaking Bangkok for a year, and you can't call anyone, and you got to train in stick fighting for a year to try and get into the UFC, I would have done it. So, man, when the UFC comes calling you, you got to do whatever it takes. All the other shows are, you know, just the minor leagues. It doesn't even compare to the UFC. So I didn't even think twice about it. I was on the next flight out.
The experience of being in there with Kimbo Slice, that was, I assume, must have been a very unique experience. I mean, overall, with Kimbo and Rashad and Rampage and some of the guys that are on the team, I mean, the fights were, you know, great at times and other times not so great depending on conditioning. But overall, I mean, personality-wise, that must have been quite an experience overall to have all those guys in there.
Yeah, I mean, Kimbo's a great guy, and, you know, I'm sure he's doing good now. And, you know, it was a great season with a lot of characters. And we had a pretty good rate of guys who are on the show who are still fighting now in the UFC, and I think it just goes to show you what kind of talent we had on the show. So it was a good season, man, and life is good now in the UFC.
Do you have any Kimbo stories or, like, recollections of early experiences? Because he obviously went into the show with quite the reputation, and I think a lot of people were expecting a very different Kimbo than the one that ended up on the program. And obviously it's a reality show, so I don't know what they cut out or left in, but they promoted him as a pretty lovable guy.
And he was. You know, really the only story I have is just, you know, he's a great guy, and he was mean on the barbecue, and man, he's just a family guy. And, you know, I was surprised everyone else. I thought he was going to be, you know, a little different than that. But, you know, he's a friend of mine and a good guy to have in the house.
Going in, you know, kind of wrapping up here, looking at your career as it stands right now, obviously, you know, very young, 8-1, beating two veterans in a row, hoping to fight another veteran in August if that happens. If that fight does happen, I mean, you kind of look back in your career. I mean, is it? You started fighting in what, 2009, correct, or 2000?
2007.
Yeah. So I mean, this has come together really quickly. I mean, do you ever kind of stop and say, "Wow, this has been quite a ride so far in a short amount of time"?
Yeah. I definitely, you know, after when I'm not in camp and not training, you know, people always tell me I got to stop and, you know, kind of enjoy the ride a lot more because I'm always training. But, man, I got a lot of work to do, and I'm definitely nowhere near satisfied. But, you know, I've had great fights, and I got a lot longer way to go to get to where I want. So I'm just trying to stay focused, and life is good, man. Life is good.
Well, we're going to wrap it up here today, but I would like you to know that I did a little bit of investigation here, and I found one famous person who practiced defendo. It was
Steven Seagal.
Better. Ian Fleming, the man who created James Bond. So it's too bad it's too bad he's been dead for 50 years, or he might have been a great guy to corner you at a weigh-in or something like that.
Serious, man. Defendo's the next thing.
Wow. Now let's get some plugs out for you. If you've got any websites, MySpace, I shouldn't say MySpace, Facebook, that sort of thing. Go ahead.
Man, just follow me on Twitter, just @BrendanSchaub, and you'll find out everything you need to know on there. And I just want to thank my sponsor, Five Star. So thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, thanks very much. Check out @BrendanSchaub.com. And Brendan, best of luck in the future. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you again later on today.
Take care.